Inside Chicago government.
Any use of power disturbs it.
ShyGov.com.
Welcome to another in a series of interviews with Ben Jarofsky. I'm Dave Gloetz. Ben writes on government and politics for the Chicago Reader. He's here with me today. Welcome to the broadcast.
Thank you, Senator.
Today we're talking about the final days of the campaign for Chicago mayor.
Weeping with nostalgia at the thought that it's ending.
Already. You're anticipating looking back on it.
Yes.
And this is a campaign waged by the incumbent, Rahm Emanuel, and his challenger, Cook County Commissioner Jesus Chuy Garcia, which you recently wrote about in a blog post.
That is correct.
It's titled, Who's Going to Win the Mayoral Election?
Yes.
Just a snapshot of where we're at. The Chicago Board of Election Commissioners says that the number of people early voting for the April election is about double than on the first go-round, the February election. And, of course, the final election day is April 7th.
Right.
Let's talk about the surprise endorsement by Second Ward Alderman Bob Fioretti.
My man.
First, let's listen to what Fioretti said when he declared himself a candidate for mayor last year.
4 years ago, a new mayor came in and asked for our vote. He promised us safer streets, stronger schools, and a more stable economy. Sadly, he has failed us by every measure. Chicago needs a change for the better. We need leadership that rises to the strength of our people. For the past 4 years, this mayor has torn us down, not built us up. I say enough is enough.
Okay, yeah.
That's what he said when he first started. But on March 29th, Fioretti and Emanuel held a press conference at which Fioretti endorsed Emanuel for mayor. Here's what he said. Quote, I will be casting my vote for Rahm Emanuel for mayor of our city, and if you are worried about the financial health of this city, you should do the same. We need not only our financial health of our city to be fixed, but also the budget for CPS, that's Chicago Public Schools, and you have only one choice. Clearly, some of the unions who did not support me in the fall want somebody, a public servant, who will do whatever they want. Fioretti went on to say, maybe we have different courses. Here he's talking about him and Emanuel. Different courses on how to achieve what's great for the city. But if you look at my record, in 2008 on the floor, and he's talking about the city council floor, I presume, I addressed the issues about the pensions. 2009, I was talking about broadening the sales tax. 2010, I talked about the casino and cooperative services between the county and the city, which, believe it or not, the mayor has been doing that with the county board president. In 2011, I talked about surplusing the TIFs, and he did that for many of the other reasons, too. So, you know, it's my ideas, too. His ideas. We believe in trying to move this city forward, broadening the middle class, and what we need to do here.
Well, it's electrifying.
Do you have any other observations?
Well, it's, my God, Bob Fioretti and Rahm could go on and on. Probably one of the most cynical moments, totally cynical campaign on so many aspects.
The pinnacle of cynical?
Well, yes, very good. It's like the pinnacle of cynical. You know, I've been talking to a lot of Bob's friends and supporters about this just informally. I hadn't planned to write about it. Maybe I will now. I think that Bob was hurt by how the election went down, that he didn't get the endorsement of Chicago Teachers Union, and that he was treated as a very marginal candidate. So I think this is an endorsement, as someone put it to me, out of spite.
It's payback.
Yeah, I guess it's a payback. Although, I don't... Now we get into it. I mean, what effect does it have? I don't see it having any effect in terms of altering votes. It perpetuates a narrative that Rahm has spent $20 million creating. And that narrative, one part, is that Chuy Garcia cannot run the city. We need Rahm to run the city, even though, as you quoted Bob saying in his opening remarks for running for mayor, it's Rahm's the one who's put us here. Rahm, Daley, the whole cabal, to quote Jane Byrne. So it's really cynical that Bob Fioretti would just totally turn around on everything he stood for the last 4 years, which supposedly was a reawakening from what he believed in from the previous 4 years when he was more or less conciliatory and working with Mayor Daley. It just underscores this notion in Chicago that you can't believe anybody, that we're all operators and there's no underlying principles to any of us. And that's sort of the general cynical attitude that prevails in Chicago, which leads itself to this notion that Mayor Rahm is sort of our custodian, our avuncular leader. Oh, he's not so avuncular. He's not so nice or whatever. So he's not like the nice uncle. He's like the mean uncle.
An acquaintance called him bestial rather than avuncular.
Avuncular, yeah. It's just a very cynical maneuver on both parts. Let's take a look at it from Rom's part. This is a guy that Rom was just blasting not too long ago. You could have easily have quoted the campaign literature that Rom sent out to destroy Bob's credibility. So now suddenly Rom is using Bob's endorsement as a sign that he is worthy of our vote. Even for Chicago, it's a pretty cynical moment. Again, like I was saying, I don't know how many votes it'll sway ultimately. But what it does, I think, is it's a dispiriting move. So that works for Rahm's advantage.
Some journalists have jumped on the fact that Fioretti's law firm and Fioretti personally loaned his campaign tens of thousands of dollars, and that the mayor has indicated he'll help Fioretti get donations to retire the debt. And I'm wondering how this works.
I've wondered the same thing myself. I looked into past campaign contributions. I believe Rom in some of those articles alluded to help that he may have given to
Gary Chico and Carol Mosley Braun in a previous election.
Yeah, there's no evidence that they received any aid. So whatever aid he gave them is not recorded in those state documents and could be a figment of Rom's imagination, or it could be aid that can never be traced.
But on the receiving end, why would it even be an issue if it's money that Fioretti essentially owes to himself?
We may have had this discussion, Dave, the difference between a loan and a contribution. So a loan is something that can be paid back. A contribution is something that's lost forever, or it's an actual expenditure that you cannot receive. So if you lend your campaign money, presumably you can pay yourself back with funds that you raise from other contributors. If Bob lent his campaign the money as opposed to donated the campaign the money, then he can pay himself back. Now, when you say campaign's in debt, that could just mean that the debt is the money he owes himself.
Why can anyone perceive it as a desperate situation? Unless he went into debt to do the loan. Maybe he ran up his credit card.
Yeah, you know? I don't know.
That's the only case in which I could see that it even mattered.
Right. He maxed out his American Express card, yeah, and now it's due. Quick, Rom, help me. It even furthers the cynicism. The way the whole thing went down was bizarre. I mean, that Rom would openly talk about helping him out on the financial end. In a state like Illinois, like, this is not the kind of conversation you supposedly are having these days in the age of reform, post-Blagojevich reform, post-Daley reform.
But to the credit of the journalists present at the press conference, they jumped right on.
Yeah, they jump right on.
Like, is this a quid pro quo?
You can't fool a Chicago journalist. We're a hardened, skeptical bunch, okay? We got you, Mr. Mayor. You can't fool us. Sorry. Yeah, we're very smart Chicago journalists. We went to college. I actually don't even think it's the money. I think it's just the spite. There, that's how naive I am. My attitude about these things in general, you can make a lot more money working with the man than you can fighting the man. So if you want to be a lawyer and make money doing business in Chicago, chances are it's in your best interest, financially speaking, to make up with Rom.
Well, I think that's the obvious calculus, because come May, he's no longer going to be an alderman, so therefore he's going to lack, arguably, the clout that he's had for a bunch of years. So he took a look in the crystal ball and said,
I still believe it's spite. Bob Fioretti was a successful lawyer for years. Bob Fioretti knows how to make a living as a lawyer. You don't have to hold a tag day for Bob Fioretti. I just personally think that this is a matter of spite. Instead of just walking away quietly, he had to stick that knife back in because they stuck the knife in him. It's so funny because one of Bob's defenders told me today, well, they, meaning Chewy and the teachers union, threw Bob under the bus. Like, oh, what did Rom do? He threw him under the first bus. So it's like being thrown under the Rom bus is better than being thrown under the...
No wonder Bob looks so bad.
I know, he's been run over twice by two different buses. Anyway, like I said, it was a very dispiriting moment. You know, here's a guy who waved the flag for reform for 4 years, and not just reform, forget reform, that's such a misused, stupid word, for trying to redistribute income. How about that? That's a better idea. And all of a sudden tells us that we have to put our trust in the man he's been rallying against for 4 years for all these cuts and closings. So it was not a high point for progressives in Chicago.
You could hear howls erupt all through the city, I believe.
But here's the other thing. If you're a Rom person, The ROM people that still talk to me, and there's a few of them hiding, were shaking their head in disbelief. You know, I was like, what a joke. What a complete farce, you know. Making fun of both Fioretti and ROM. I don't know why ROM would do this unless it's to me. Maybe he wanted to humiliate Fioretti. You know, that could be it.
Talk about cynical.
I mean, since Fioretti's doing it out of spite, maybe ROM's like, you know what? I'm going to make you grovel. And then I'm going to say, I own you.
That's not avuncular at all.
He's not the avuncular ROM in the sweater. How quickly he's transformed. Oh, Chicagoans, they're so dumb.
I want to come back to that comment in just a minute. But regardless of Alderman Fioretti's motivations, he's echoed those who criticize Mr. Garcia for not having an actual plan to deal with the city's vast financial pension obligations and structural deficit. At this point in time when, you know, he's had to face a lot of that criticism and respond to it, how valid do you think it is?
It's valid. It's valid to ask a candidate running for office what he or she intends to do. What I find humorous about it, or ironic, I don't know what the word is anymore, is that the same accusation could be made against ROM. In fact, I would make that accusation against ROM. Being one of the few people in Chicago who wastes his time following what ROM does with budgets, we've had this conversation before, Dave. I think ROM basically stopped being ROM-like about a year ago and began punting. Well, he was probably punting a year before that. You know, budget games to put off a tax, both at the Board of Education and with the regular Chicago budget. He continues the TIF program. He has not stipulated in any way how he's going to raise the money to make the pension obligations he has. He retreated from his pension plan in the face of a lawsuit by unions against it. So that's on hold. That's putting the best spin on it. He then took the money that was supposedly going to be used to pay for that pension deal, and Lord knows what he spent it on. That was the money he raised through a phone tax. So the same accusation that could be made against Jesus Garcia can be made against ROM. I'm actually sympathetic to both candidates on this front. I don't blame them for not being specific. I don't blame them for if they have a plan for showing their plan, because they're only going to get hammered. And this gets back to the comment about the public. The public is so dumb in Chicago. Well, probably dumb everywhere, but let's just stick with Chicago because it's something I know about. I mean, we've been led to believe, first of all, our government can be trusted with budgets, okay? You know, we have this faith, which is so misguided, in all-powerful mayors that goes 20 years a daily. He got us into this mess, and then we just transfer power to another all-powerful mayor who supported Daley the whole time. So we think there's going to be some kind of change. We don't want our property taxes raised, even though the mayor raises them every year with the schools and every year with the TIFs. We have this pretense that he's not raising property taxes.
He says it so adamantly.
He says it. Well, Daley said the same thing, and it's repeated. It's just part of the mantra.
In debate, it's called the big lie.
Yes. So why should we reserve our criticism to this hapless challenger who's got $4 million? So we become like talking heads in ROM's commercials. Why would we want to do that? Well, speaking of the press. So, yeah, Chewy has not stated his plans. Neither has ROM.
So it's a matter of which can dance better leading up to the election.
Well, that's a PR spin. But if you're a voter who actually thinks voting on the future of Chicago in terms of its economic situation, as Bob Fioretti would have you believe he, Bob, is doing, as opposed to spite, then you're asking yourself, well, which of these candidates has shown me that they'll act in my best interest, I guess is the way to put it.
Who's the more effective steward of our financial house?
No, the question you're asking is like a universal question. I'm asking a very personal question. Huh. And I think this is how many voters view things, particularly on the North Side. I'm more familiar with the North Side liberal breed, having lived among them for so many years. So they're worried about which one of these candidates is more likely to raise my property taxes and how drastically, and which one of these candidates is more likely to advance a program that might somehow or other retard the increase in value of my property. This is how a Northside liberal tends to view things in the privacy of his or her home. I know this from having spoken to many of them. ROM's the most reassuring because if you look at his 4 years of programs, the cuts that he's made have not really hit hard at middle class, upper middle class, North Side liberals. They've hit other people, and they've supposedly been in the best interest of the people who've been hit the hardest. So it's easy to say, yeah, not only do I agree with what ROM's done, but it's good for the city.
So things like closing the mental health clinics.
Closing the mental health clinics, which is something that the mental health activists have forced Chicago to confront, which really most people don't confront because, like we've said, if you have money and a good healthcare program, you can pay for your own therapist. You're not dependent on a public therapist. I think that part of the reason Rahm will clobber Chuy Garcia in wards like the 42nd Ward, which is the Gold Coast, or wards like the 43rd Ward, which is Lincoln Park, or wards like the 44th Ward, which is Lakeview, is that the residents there will say, yeah, he's going to look out for me. That's basically what they're saying. Why do voters in communities that Rahm has hit hard with his policies still vote for Rahm? Well, that's when we move away from the area of self-interest and sort of do Chicago's own version of What's the Matter with Kansas. Remember that book from a few years ago?
Yeah.
So why do people whose communities have not been invested in by Rahm vote for Rahm? That's a whole other discussion. You know, Mick and I just did a story about TIFs again, taking a look where Rahm spends the TIF money. And
this is an article titled Who Wins and Loses in Rahm's TIF Game that appeared in The Reader on March 26th, 2015.
Once again, like half the TIF expenditures in Rahm's 4 years have been in the area, either in and just around the loop. So if you're a resident of Northwest Side, Southwest Side, Southeast Side, South Side, Far South Side, you would vote against them from just purely economic self-interest. You would hope that Chuy would drastically change that program. And according to the polls, there's not a similar vote for Chuy in neighborhoods that have not benefited from Rahm's programs that corresponds to the vote for Rahm that comes out of neighborhoods that have benefited from Rahm's programs.
I want to ask you a question similar to the one I asked you about Garcia's plan or lack of plan on dealing with Chicago finances. You and Mick wrote in the article we just talked about that Mayor Emanuel says he's open to using some of the so-called surplus tax increment financing funds to pay off Chicago's huge pension obligations. Do you feel that his openness around releasing some of the surplus, which some feel is well over $1 billion, has changed in recent time?
I don't think it's changed that much. We have, according to the books, all right, according to the annual reports, we have, I forget, what, $1.3 billion in reserve, something like that.
I believe 1.7.
Or was it 1.7? I get my numbers mixed. 1.3 is how much Rahm claims he spent. You're right, 1.7, you're right. We have 1.7 in reserves if you just add up the bottom line numbers and all these annual reports. And Rahm claims that all but $200 million of that is obligated. The $1.3 billion is the amount that Rahm claims to have actually spent or committed during his first 4 years, and that's what Mick and I studied. The issue is how much of that $1.7 billion is actually obligated? How much is linked to a specific contract that can't be broken?
Which, as we've discussed before, he's not allowing any transparency.
That is correct.
But so my question has to do not with that, but it sounded to me of late that he is invoking the TIF surplus more and more.
Well, what I'm saying is that TIF surplus was first introduced by activists like Tom Tresser, and then Rahm was forced to confront it. What I'm saying is that he's only doing that because
his feet are being held to the fire.
He's been forced to do that. He's only been forced to address the fact that there's all this money sitting in reserves. This one part of the TIF game he plays is that every year has this pretense where he's supposedly exhaustively studied the surplus and come to the conclusion that he could release X amount of money, which is
the gift.
The gift. And this is, let's thank you, oh, powerful Buana, you know? That's how Chicagoans react. Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Thank you. Oh, my God. But see, the problem with releasing TIF surplus money is that, here we get into the weeds, he can't control literally all of it. It doesn't all go to City Hall. It gets redistributed to the taxing bodies from whom it was taken in the first place. So the Board of Ed gets 50% of any, or a little more than 50% of any surplus. So if you're releasing $200 million, you only get $100 million of that to play around with to use for your pensions. So since it's a scam in which they've extracted the money from these taxing bodies in the first place,
they lose if they release
they
it.
They lose if they release it. So he limits the amount he wants to release, and that's the game he's playing. He wants to spend that money the way he wants to spend that money. And Lord knows how many overruns there's going to be at that cockamamie Marriott Hotel DePaul basketball arena, which will require TIF expenditures.
Which I'm sure we'll be talking about again. Finally, Ben, you've mentioned a couple times the intelligence of the average Chicago voter. And we got mail from one of our listeners, Brandon.
Okay.
Brandon writes, love your discussions on Chicago government. However, I'm growing tired of Ben's berating of Chicago's voters. We're not all lemmings. We're not all sitting around with our heads in the sand, etc. Reverence isn't necessary, but respect and faith, and he's got a question mark after faith, would be appreciated. As Amy Goodman would say, your response.
Of course, when I make these comments about Chicago voters, I'm excluding Brandon from the, because I could tell that he's educated.
All you have to do, listeners, is write in. You'll become part of the elite pool of excluded.
What do you want me to say? You want me to give you a pass, Chicago? I mean, really, what do you want me to do? Okay, is literally everybody a lemming? No, but I think that by and large, we are a city of lemmings. I think it's a good word, Brandon. Thank you. I don't know if I used the word before. Hadn't thought of it in those terms.
Oops.
Now you gave me another image to work with. Well, what do you want me to do? You know, I mean, this is going on for how many years? Think about this. Let's just take a look. Today's Tribune, it has a poll that says Mayor Rahm's up 58%, okay? 58 to 30. For 4 years, the press has been reporting about the games that Rahm has played with various budgets, with the deficits that he's run up, with his inability to deal with the pension obligations, with the bond rating agencies lowering the bond. And yet, 58% of the people are going to vote for Rahm largely on the notion that has been perpetuated by his campaign machine, which is funded by some of the wealthiest people in Chicago, who obviously are benefiting the most from his policies, that he is the financial wizard that's going to lead us to the promised land. So what do you want me to say about the vision, the intelligence of Chicago voters when you see that? When for 4 years, the evidence has been that he's mismanaging the city, financially speaking, or at best punting, which I give him credit for, by the way. And yet 58% turn around and vote for him largely because they think he's doing a good job or can do better than somebody else. I don't have a lot of faith in Chicago voters. Sorry, Brandon. Don't really know how to twist. I mean, can you help me here? How can I redefine this so they're more sophisticated?
Rather than go there, I think that perhaps we could recognize that it must be awfully frustrating for voters like Brandon who see beyond the statistics, who see beyond the headlines, and have some deeper insight into this. And I know that I like to think, because I have around me other sort of critical thinkers, that, you know, a lot of people are like that. And it might be a little disconcerting to realize, you know, a lot of people aren't like that.
I know. It's like, if you only talk to your friends, people who agree with you, then it's like, oh, yeah, man, we're all smart in Chicago, you know. People who view the world the way I do are a minority in Chicago. I've come to recognize that, Dave. I've been on the losing end of all these battles. I like to joke, like, but supposedly everybody agrees with me. Or like, for instance, a TIF program. The notion that we should have transparency. Everybody said we should have transparency. So the most fundamental aspect of this TIF program, which is how much is in reserve, is not part of the public debate. In fact, again, I can't say this enough. We would only know that there is a reserve because of Tommy Tresser and his groups who added it up.
Some citizen movement energized and active.
And then manipulated and exploited by the all-powerful mayor who's funded by gazillionaires. Ken Griffin, how much money did he just recently give Rahm?
A bundle.
A bundle, okay. Year in and year out, reporters dutifully report these issues. We haven't even gotten the issue of the complicated borrowing procedures of our Board of Education, which we're trying to, in the name of saving money, end up paying more in interest to bankers to lend us money. Why would we put up with that as a citizenry unless we were...
not.
I don't know what, Brandon. We're so smart. Does that make you feel better?
Ben, that's all we have time for. Thanks for joining me today.
You're welcome.
Listeners, we always welcome your questions and comments. You can get those to us via Facebook and Twitter. Search for Inside Chicago Government. I'm Dave Gloetz. Thanks for listening.